in December of 2007, the company that I was managing in Puerto Rico was going out of business. And I had to have a conversation with my wife that no one wants to have. Babe, things are bad. They're not paying our salary. They're not going to pay to relocate us, and we can't stay here. But don't worry, I have a plan.
Boom! This is Satoru Mateo, and welcome to a brand new episode of Half-Assed to Badass. What do you do when the odds are against you? When your back is against the wall, when it seems like all your resources are gone, and your family depends on you for their survival? How do you deal with the stress, overwhelm, while still keeping your family together? In today's episode, you will hear me interview an amazing entrepreneur, father and husband, Chris Tidwell, who brought his family to a new country, starting totally from scratch, hardly being able to put food on the table, paying rent, to making over $400 million in sales. Listen to the inspiring story, and let's jump into the interview. But first, here's the intro. How do entrepreneurs, business owners, and experts influence themselves, their clients, and teams to maximize profitability, efficiency, and create lasting impact? How do they simplify life and business and yet still achieve more? What's the one thing separating the mediocre from the best? This podcast will give you the answers and reveal the secret strengths and the not-so-easy-to-admit flaws of your belief. My name is Satoru Mateo, and welcome to the Half-Ass to Badass podcast. How you doing, Chris?
Awesome. So excited to be here, Satoru, and be on your podcast. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, it's great. So I know we've got a lot of cool topics to talk about, but before I start, I want to ask you a question that I like to ask anybody that I interview, because we are on the Half-Assed to Badass podcast. In your perspective, what's the difference between a half-ass and a badass?
Okay, I kind of knew you were going to ask me this question, Satoru, but in my perspective, the difference between half-assed and badass, there's two parts to my opinion. One, someone that goes half-assed is kind of going through the motions, and someone that's a badass is all in, you know, taking all the risks, willing to do everything, do or die, we're going to make this happen, yes or no. But I think on a larger scale, I think mostly for entrepreneurs, the big difference is those that do good things for their business versus those that do those things that are essential. I think there's so many people that do good things in their business and they don't get the results they're looking for and they're frustrated. And I don't think necessarily that they don't realize that they're half-assing it, but what they don't realize they're doing is they're looking at alternative things to do that are good things for the business, but not the essential things that make the difference and generate the results they're looking for.
Good. Cool. Nice perspective. Awesome. So I know you've done a lot of amazing stuff and a lot of interesting things. And so I'd love to know a little bit about you. How about you share with our audience your backstory? Because I think it's fascinating.
Okay. Well, I'm from the United States. I grew up in San Diego, California. But I currently live in El Salvador in Central America. And kind of give you guys an example kind of what my story was. In December of 2007, the company that I was managing in Puerto Rico was going out of business. And I had to have a conversation with my wife that no one wants to have. Babe, things are bad. They're not paying our salary. They're not going to pay to relocate us, and we can't stay here. But don't worry, I have a plan. How does it sound if we go to Bidu, Peru? Yeah, Peru, just for 90 days. And within a month, my wife, Daniela, and my two sons, Brock and Sander, both under the age of three, were on a plane leaving Puerto Rico, going to Lima. When we landed in Lima, I knew it was all or nothing, todo or nada. We just had to make it 90 days. And we hit the ground running. I was working about 100 hours a week. Most days, I was gone in the morning before my kids woke up, and I got back after they were asleep. The challenge was, is my wife, when we were living in Puerto Rico, my wife, she spoke a little bit of Spanish. She'd taken Spanish in high school, but she could say hello and goodbye, just the basics. But most people in Puerto Rico speak English. So when we got to Peru, it was like a major shock because like seemed like nobody spoke English. Everybody spoke in Spanish. Right. And because of the nature of the business, trying to figure out how to put the food on the table, literally, with the situation I had with the business, the big question was, well, you know, honey, you need to take care of the house and the kids, and I need to focus on the business, you know. And so you're in a foreign country, you don't know anybody, you're basically like a fish out of the water. Everybody looks at you kind of strange, because we like my wife is like me, blonde hair, blue eyes. My kids are all blonde hair, blue eyes. So like we don't fit in. Everybody stares at you, and trying to get a taxi to go get groceries, and then figure out what you do, because both kids are asleep and they're both like under the age of three. And you got to figure out how to get the groceries out of the car without the taxi taking off with your groceries. Because if you take the kids out and leave the groceries in the car, the taxis in Lima, with the same Spanish they say, vivos, they'll take off with the groceries. So we figure out how to do that, get them up to like the 13th floor where our apartment was, and make things work. About a month into the project, it's just one of those, my wife, she called me. She was like super frustrated. She said, Chris, you know, I just need to make some cookies. Can you go to the grocery store? And she gave me a list of ingredients. And on that list of ingredients was brown sugar. I was like, no problem. I'll go pick up the brown sugar, bring them home so you can make your cookies, kind of feel back at home and everything. And I get to the grocery store, go to the grocery store aisle, and I'm looking for sugar, and I see white sugar. And I'm looking, I can't find the brown sugar. I see one that's called, it's called blonde sugar, azúcar rubia. I'm like, oh, this is kind of strange. I have got blonde hair, but I've never seen blonde sugar before. So I asked the guy in the corner, hey, you know, where's the brown sugar? And he looks at me kind of like I'm this racist, like, what do you mean you're brown sugar, you know? And I called my wife. I said, honey, I said, they don't have any brown sugar. She said, well, did you go to the other supermarket? I said, no, you don't understand. They don't have any brown sugar in the country. So I come home. I give her the sugar. She's like, well, I can't make the sugar because without brown sugar. I said, well, you don't have an option. If you want, you can use some blonde sugar, but, you know, there's no other option here. And kind of to make her calm down, I said, you know what? Tonight, instead of you worrying about dinner, I'm going to fix everything. I'm going to bring dinner home for you. So next to my office was a Chinese restaurant. I go to the Chinese restaurant, pick up some orange chicken, some chow mein, and some spring rolls. I even splurged, bought the spring rolls, and I go home and we sit down and have dinner. Everything was lovely for like the first 15 minutes. About half an hour after dinner, my oldest son starts throwing up. And I pick him up and I run him to the bathroom. He had like this long hallway that goes from like the kitchen to the bathroom. And I'm like holding him and running to the bathroom. And while I'm doing it, he doesn't stop. So like leaves a trail of vomit from the kitchen to the bathroom. And while I'm in the bathroom, I hear my wife scream, Chris! And my other son, Xander, he started throwing up. Oh, and wow. By the time I get back from the bathroom to the kitchen, not only is my son throwing up, my wife's throwing up. Everybody's like sick. I'm the only, it seems like I have a stomach of steel. Everybody else got sick, but had like basically food poisoning but me. Mm-hmm. And this went on for like 3 days. And my wife said, Chris, I can't do this. He said, do you know where the hospital is? And the truth was, I didn't know where the hospital was. He said, let alone a doctor to take the kids and get them fixed. And here we are in this foreign country, in this environment that I don't know. It's a new world, new concept. And I realized for the first time that there was no plan B. There was no rescue team. It was just literally do or die, us or nothing. And when I went to Peru, I had purchased a round trip ticket back to Puerto Rico because it was cheaper to buy the round trip ticket than like a one way.
Right.
But I had no reason to go back to Puerto Rico. We weren't Puerto Ricans. We sold everything when we went to Peru. And if you live on an island, you know really quickly that people don't buy used items because I know that when you leave, you're going to have to get rid of everything anyways. So they just wait till you leave, and then you'll know that you have to give it away. So we basically left everything behind, started over with a couple of suitcases in Peru again, and there's no reason to go back. So we're basically stuck there. If I didn't make the money to make things work in Peru, there was no going back. And the next 7 months, we were selling over $1 million a month. And over the next 10 years, I'd sell over $400 million in over 12 countries in the region.
Wow.
And the interesting thing that most people don't understand, when they ask me, like, Chris, you know, how did you do everything? I said, you know, it's not what I did. It's my wife, you know, that she supported me. And what I found out is that, you know, in the beginning, not only did she survive, within 6 months, she's speaking fluent Spanish. She speaks today as well, if not better Spanish than I do. She gave birth to two beautiful boys in Peru in a foreign country. She's a trooper. She's followed me. You know, we currently live in El Salvador. We were in Peru for 10 years. Oh, wow. I told her we'd be there in Peru for 90 days, ended up being 10 years. Can you imagine that? And then about 2 years ago, we moved from Peru to El Salvador for a new project that I'm working on. But what I learned is if you go all in for 90 days, you know, do or die and do everything, you can literally change the course of your life. And that's what happened to us. And what I do today, I like to share with people, you know, how can you go all in? How can you apply the things that I've seen to make a huge difference? And one of the things that I love is that you know, Latin America is a different culture than the United States.
Right.
I hear people complain all the time about, you know, things are so tough, the economy, this or that. I'm like, you have no idea. I'm talking about people that make maybe $300 a month and teach them how to generate an income, how to make a living, where these people supposedly have everything against you. But if you apply three basic concepts in your life, it doesn't matter where you live and what country, you have opportunity to change everything if you're willing to put the work in.
Right.
I think that's the hard part. You know, it's, you know, I tell people all the time in Latin America, I mean, there's, you know, I'm looking for people that I don't care if you're poor or if you have money, but you have to be hungry. Because there are people that are poor that aren't hungry. They don't want to do the work. You know, they'll wait for some kind of handout, you know, but there are people that are hungry that if you give them instructions, you know, you do this, 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 and give them a recipe, you know, they're willing to do the work, and they'll actually see their lives change drastically in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
And that's the amazing part about, you know, kind of your message about going from half-ass to badass, is that it doesn't matter where you are, what kind of resources you have. If you're willing to be a badass and you're willing to go all in, do or die, you can literally change the course and direction of your life. I know about your story too, and how you change a lot of your direction of your life. It's the same thing about going all in, and sometimes you'll think you're crazy when you go through it. But you know, in my case, when I was in Puerto Rico, I swear, like, everybody was leaving the company. The company I was working with was going basically insolvent. Everybody told me it's a Titanic, jump before it sinks.
Right.
You know, and then like less than a year later, they're like, "Oh, you're so lucky, man." Man, if I would have stayed too, it would have been, you know, I could have been exactly, I mean, you just basically handed to him, like, what were you talking about, man? Where were you when everybody walked away from the company? everybody said it was a sinking ship. There was no reason to stay.
Yes.
You know, my own father-in-law left the company, went to another company. He was the VP of marketing. And when everybody left, I thought, you know what? I have a huge opportunity. There's no competition. I don't have to worry about anybody else in the corporate chain. I became a partner of the company, and we became extremely successful. But at the time, you know, the way I became a partner was the company wasn't worth anything. So giving me a percentage of the company was like, well, we can't pay a salary, so we'll offer them shares. That'll be a way to you know. But they never suspected that within the next 5-6 years, I would generate over $100 million a year in sales in 7 or 8 countries in the region.
I'm curious to ask you, when you say that, when you were going through that, right, like here you get like this portion of a company, right? What were the internal struggles that you were going through?
For me, you know, I was young. I was only 26, 27 when this happened. And so like one of the challenges I had is I'm dealing with most people around me could have been my parents or even my grandparents my coworkers that I worked with. So I like the way I dressed was really important. I felt like I was always dressing to be like I was 35, 40. And now that I'm like 40, I'm like, man, like where did my youth go? I spent all my years trying to be older. And now I'm older. But like the struggles that I had, a lot had to do with like, you know, doubt, and like when things don't work out, like you have a tendency not to act, and that's like the worst possible thing. I mean, the most important thing you can do is if things go bad and things aren't working is to focus on profit producing activities and do as much action as possible. And for me, that's what was the difference was. I had to finally figure out, you know what, no one's gonna do anything for me. And I went from a mode of being, let's say, kind of like an employee where I kind of felt like everything was being handled and done for me, where I realized I had a rude awakening that, you know what, there's no corporate, safety team or anybody's going to back me up. I mean, if it doesn't work out, I'm screwed. Like this is either do or die. Like I literally figure out if I don't make money this month, I can't pay the groceries to put food on the table.
Makes you very creative.
Yeah, so you get really extremely creative, and you find out really quick what's really essential that you have to do versus what's good things that can do for your business. Because you realize that, you know, if I don't generate something now, like I can't pay the rent, I can't put food on the table. And so it forces you to basically compress your time and focus on what's the most important. And that's what happened. You know, for 90 days, that's what we did, and things started changing. And within 6 months, we went from a business that was only doing $15,000 a month in July of 2007 to July of 2008, we did over $1 million in volume. You know, and at that time it was more money than I've ever seen in my entire life. If you would have told me that, you know, from a year to date, you'd be doing over $1 million a month and generating over $300,000 to $400,000 a month in profit, I'd have been like, there's no way, you know, that I'm gonna have $100 million in cash in the bank account. I would never have been able to imagine what would have happened. But what happened was I focused on what I did on a daily basis, the actions that needed to be done, And that action like really changed everything. But I think mindset, like the first part, is the hardest part. Like getting through, like getting rid of these philosophies, ideas that you think, a lot of times that we have, that we carry on from our childhood, that our parents have told us or that our community has told us, that really aren't accurate.
Right.
If you can get rid of those, then you can get to the next part, which is doing the action, you know, doing the profit producing activities. I think in every business model is exactly the same, regardless if you're in one sector or another. There's always things that have to be done that create profit in your business. And if you just do those things and focus on learning how to compress time and use overcompensation,
right?
You know,
I'm curious, because when you say that, I think it's so many people, you know, listening to this right now, they want to succeed, they want to accomplish things. And I'm curious to know, like, because I, like you're saying, like the mindset, right? We have different kind of beliefs, right? But both internal beliefs about ourselves, and then also about, you know, the market. People say, oh, you know, the market is bad, or the economy is bad, or this is like externally, or I don't have time, or you have all these external obstacles, right? Mm-hmm. But then also we have these internal obstacles. What would you say? What was the one mindset shift, mental shift that you made internally that? And number two is, how did you evaluate, how do you make the evaluation of what specific actions am I going to focus on? What are the activities that I'm going to focus on?
Okay. So in my situation, the biggest mindset change for me was realizing that it's all up to me. You know, there's no one that's going to do it for me. And I think that, like, in corporate America, I think people have a tendency, especially the way we're raised in school, our school system doesn't teach you to be an entrepreneur. You know, so you're not, like, in the classroom and in your environment, even in college, university, it's not geared that direction. So when you get into a corporate job and you're young, you kind of have this idea that the companies can provide everything for you. So when you're in a situation where the company's not paying your salary, they're not taking care of you, and you're basically being stranded and abandoned in an island, literally, like in my case.
Right.
Things change really quick. You realize that, you know what, these ideas that I had are completely wrong. And then you start to realize that, you know what, I've been here on an island for the last 2 years doing everything on my own anyways, but I had like this false illusion that the big brother or the company was taking care of me. And then all of a sudden I realized, you know what, the training wheels are off. Like literally, I've had training wheels for like the last 2 years, but really I've been alone.
I'm not going to be saved.
No one's coming to save me. I'm stuck here unless I figure out how to take care of my family. And that's what happened for me, is that, you know, I've got two kids, my wife, things are bad. I mean, I had to go to my landlord in Puerto Rico and say, listen, you know, at the time, this was like at the start of the huge bubble in the United States, the housing bubble and everything, and the economy was going in the tanker. I said, you know, things are bad. And everybody was talking about how bad the economy was. And I said, you know, I've got to get out of my lease. You got to let me out of my lease. Either let me out, or I'm not going to be able to keep paying you. I'm going to leave anyways. I'm going to leave the island. The company's not paying my salary. And he got me out of the lease. But it was interesting, because this is going on in the economy about how bad this environment is. And then I realized I'm on my own. I get out of my situation in Puerto Rico, go to Peru, which is considered like a lower market, less opportunities, all the reasons why I shouldn't be successful. And by relying on myself and knowing that it's only up to me to get it done, and focusing on specific actions, that basically came down to making connections with people, telling stories. And you know, when we talk about like actions that need to be done, that need to be profit producing, I think the big key is, you know, how many of those actions provide you opportunity to, on a platform where you can tell your story. And what happened is, when I started telling my story, people started connecting with me and started getting traction and started getting results. And so in an environment which should have been impossible, all of a sudden I'm generating over $1 million in sales a month. And I, in the next 4 years, grow the business. I'm not in the United States. So I'm doing $100 million. I'm not even in the U.S. I'm in, wow, in the second tier markets that, you know, I'm in El Salvador, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, Colombia, Ecuador, Bolivia, Costa Rica, and Mexico. And I'm generating this kind of volume. In a time when the United States was, let's say, an economic crisis, and it was justifiable that I could have just thrown my hands up in there, you know what, the economy's bad, go home, I'm going to live with my mom and my dad or my in-laws until I can find a way to kind of get my head up and figure out what to do. And I realized, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
I'm going to make it happen. So, and that's what we did. So we'll go to Peru for 90 days, and worst case scenario, I get to know another country. It'll be an adventure. and it being the best thing I could ever have decided for my family and for my life.
What do you think was the driving force? What drove you to do that? Because I'm thinking about, you know, people have a lot of different motivational forces, right? And I look at some people, they're focused on, you know, what's in their way, what's the problem, and some people focus on what they want. And I think that we all probably do a mixture of all, right? But have you noticed that, what do you think has been the key distinction for you when you were able to go from that to making, you know, millions of dollars? What do you think was the key distinction in your focus and your drive? What motivated you or inspired you to take action?
Well, there's two parts that motivate me. One's positive, one's kind of a negative. Like on the first, a lot of things that motivate me when I look back at in the past when I've been successful are things that, like, I have to prove to everybody that they're wrong. You know, so like when everything fell out and the company fell apart and we were stuck in Puerto Rico, it's like, well, I have to prove to everybody that they were wrong, you know? And so like that, you know, especially being young, I was 26, 25 at the time, and I wanted to prove to everybody, you know, I can come in as a newcomer, doesn't have experience, doesn't have the knowledge, and I can think differently outside the box, do things differently, and focus on the people and generate something that no one's ever seen before. And like that to me, like, really drives me. I remember when I was a teenager and I had like my first girlfriend like break up with me, like in my mind, like it drove me to go to the gym, to work out, to like really start bodybuilding on a bigger level, was like this drive that like the one day that she would see me like, oh crap, you know, I screwed up. I shouldn't have broken up with him. You know, it seems really childish now, like, you know, 20 plus years later. Uh-huh. But there's a certain motivation that comes from like this desire to kind of prove, you know, that, you know, you're wrong. I can still do this. You know, you don't really know who I really am. I'm a different person. I'm more complex than what you see on the outside. And that's one part. The other part is I had this big desire to help people. And I had an opportunity when I was 19 to spend 2 years in Latin America. So I had this dream to want to go back. And I had made a lot of friends. And a lot of the friends that I made, they came up in environments where they basically didn't have any opportunities to grow. At the time, the internet was still pretty small. So the online learning wasn't an item. You didn't have YouTube where you could pick up knowledge like you can today. I mean, literally today, you can find more knowledge that can be applied towards a business online than you'll find in most universities. And the crazy part is you can find it online for free, you know? And so there's this huge shift as far as learning goes, kind of like I do with this podcast. I mean, the things that we talk about, you talk about in their podcast, Satori, you won't find most classes in a university won't talk about half the things you talk about, which are essential to actually growing and building a business. And in my case, you know, I had this group of people who were good people. You know, they worked hard, they had good desires, but literally the economy they lived in would only pay them, let's say, $300 a month, if even that. And so the opportunities to be able to go to school and get some kind of education that better their skills or their knowledge was like, no. And in my business module, my focus was teaching people how to generate an additional income. So for me to take somebody that couldn't make, let's say, $300 a month and teach them how to make $500 a month, to me was awesome. You know, and it doesn't seem like a lot, especially in the United States, but for like a single mom that's trying to feed her kids, an additional $200 a month on the table as far as like groceries. I mean, what they call it in Spanish, they call it the canasta básica, which is basically like your food basics that you have to survive, is basically like $198 a month in Latin America. So by them generating an additional $200, it made a huge difference whether they could put their kids in school, what kind of food they could put on the table. And it kind of opened for them like an idea, because a lot of them never had the idea that I could ever make $500 a month. That's like almost double the regular wage that all of my neighbors and all my friends are making if they can find a job. So I had this drive that, you know, if I can help these people, I like that part. I mean, I like making money, but it's fun, like, in the process, also helping people at the same time. So they kind of had those double combination. One, helping people, but the other one, too, like, I wanted to prove to everybody that, you know, all the naysayers that said I was stupid and that I was gonna go down with the ship and everything else, there's a part of me that wanted to say, you know, screw you, I'm going to do it anyways. You know, kind of that, I guess, a badass mentality. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it's interesting to see how you directed your focus and how you were able to contribute and make a difference and actually change people's lives and change the economy by changing your life first, but also then looking at how can I serve, how can I make the difference in these people's lives, and it kind of shifted the possibilities that people would be able to go through. That's really cool. How do you deal with stress?
Well, I cook, so I have days that are amazing stress wise. I had a point probably in 2011. I just where certain things would happen. The business was so it wasn't like stress, like financial stress with money, but just always I had things like where I had an entire container, a product, like work over $250,000 disappear. So from customs to my warehouse, it just disappeared. You know, or government problems where there is a government agency that's trying to find a way to shut you down, and at the end of the day they just want money to say, you know, how much are you willing to pay to keep your company open, to keep making X amount of $1 million a year. So like that would generate like almost to a point of anxiety for me. And that was like, I got to the point where it got so bad that I would have like panic attacks, you know, not like I have to think about breathing, or like I'd have like pulsating like in my eyes, you know, just like not healthy. So, you know, one of the things that an outlet for me is exercise. That's one of the things I do. I like cooking because everything's like in a controlled environment. I can be creative. For me, it's like really simple. I can play with recipes. And in my family, that's what I do. Like when I got married, my wife, the deal was, okay, if you cook, I'll wash the dishes. And I hate washing the dishes. So for me, it was like, hallelujah, this is fantastic. This is a marriage made in heaven. So since we first got married, I did most of the cooking, and my wife, she'd clean the kitchen. She washed the dishes. So that's just been the thing. So if I'm available to cook, I typically will make dinner and cook food. But it's a major stress reliever for me. It's a way for me to kind of not worry about challenges that I have at the office, or just kind of leave everything out and just focus on the ingredients that I have and how I'm going to cook it and be creative. So
that's cool. Interesting thing. I thought about that. You know, it's like people have, you know, people that are in business, people that are entrepreneurial, people that have a family, like I mean, your situation, you went through like this major like transition, major change, right? And I'm curious to know, like, you know, when you are, you know, where you were, right, and then you come up and you start making millions of dollars. I think that a lot of people have the idea or the fantasy that when you make millions of dollars, all your stress goes away, all your overwhelm goes away, all your frustration goes away. There's right. And so I'm curious today, right? Like you said, you deal with stress in different ways, and there's different problems, right? Different challenges that you face. I know you're making a big difference in a lot of people's lives. I'm looking at when you think about the different things that you have to juggle, like how do you prepare your day? How do you prepare, and how do you balance the family with work?
Mm-hmm. And that's you know, I think that the work-life balance is like a misnomer. I think it's really difficult. And the best way I can explain it is that I think that in different stages of your life, there'll be different aspects of your life that require more amounts of time. So, you know, I think that if you're trying to achieve this harmonic balance structure of work and life, I really don't think that's really available all the time. I think there's times when your family will require more time than, let's say, you put into work, and there's times when your work will require more. In 2012, the company I was in, I decided to leave that company and started to start my own business, and I launched in 12 countries in the first year that we were open, and I was gone from home more that year than I was at home. You know, my wife, she picked up a lot of slack, and she was basically mom and dad. She was kind of like a single mom most of the time that I was gone. And so, but it goes back and forth. And there's times where I've been at home more. I don't travel, you know, I don't travel nearly as much as I used to travel at the time. I used to be gone. I'd be home a week and then be gone for like 2 weeks and then come home and then travel to all these different countries in the region. But what I found is that it kind of goes back and forth. There's times when you'll need more in one area and times you'll need more in another. But at the same time, making sure that you're present when you are in those activities. I think one of the challenges that I found is that a lot of times that when I did have time to be at home, if I could just turn everything off and just focus on my kids. I have got four boys, and especially now going through like different ages, it's different. Like they grow up fast. When they're younger, like, oh, it's not a big deal, I'm gone, because they're so young, they're not going to really notice. And then you start realizing that, you know, I miss all the activities they have at school and this and that, and you kind of, you know, I want to be there. Or the hard part is that you're traveling, seeing all these amazing things, but you don't have your wife there with you, your kids to share it with. you know, so those are the kind of the complications that you come through. But I really think that in your career as a whole, especially someone getting started or looking at launching a business, there are going to be times where you're going to have to put more time in. You're going to have to be willing to put 100-hour work weeks in, because there's no way else to get it launched off the ground unless you're willing to put the work. But I think it's important that when you are in, let's say you're in a family environment, that you can turn everything off, you know, so they're not like you're at the table and you're looking at your phone, looking at your messages, and you're just taking phone calls, but you can actually disconnect and be present where you are at the time. I think that's key.
Yeah, I think that's interesting you say that, because I think that's probably one of the things that people struggle with a lot. It's like, they're working really hard to launch their business or launch the entrepreneurial journey, and they don't know how to disconnect. And they think that they have to push and push and push. I mean, one thing that I've seen is that when people can let go and they can take the time to center or be present with their family, they actually bring more energy to it when they actually start doing it, mm-hmm. and not again get into the struggle. So do you have some kind of a morning routine or a morning way of how you prep to win the day?
So I get up in the morning and my routine, I've got four boys. So the first thing in the morning is just getting the kids ready to go to school. It's always a struggle. I've got a 14-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 9-year-old and a 3.5-year-old. So I get up in the morning, my wife and I both get up at the same time. It's kind of like tag team. Okay. You do the breakfast. I'll pull them out of bed. Like literally, like physically have to pull them out of bed. Typically about 5:50 in the morning to get ready. We have to be at the door by 6:20. I've got boys, so it's a lot quicker getting ready in the morning. It's not like if I had teenage daughters, it would be a whole different world. but they basically, I have one of my sons. It's really funny. He's 9, and he has it figured out that he'll go to bed the night before with his school clothes on.
Oh, wow.
So
that's a good strategy.
So I always laugh at him. I say, you know, maybe, you know, you probably smell better if you didn't sleep in your clothes. But, you know, he's like, no, Dad, you know, if he has like swimming at school, he likes sleep with his swimming shorts on. And then he's got his school clothes on over that. He'll get up, brush his teeth. I'm good to go, you know, have breakfast. And he's good to go. But basically we get the kids out. And typically once the kids are out, sometimes I have to go to school with them at the same time, but sometimes my wife takes them, and if she takes them, then I'll go to the gym for about an hour and a half, and then come back to the office. Typically, when I'm at the gym, I'm always listening to podcasts or listening to some kind of audio book. That's kind of like my thing. So every morning before I start working, I listen to something positive, some kind of message that I can kind of apply to my life. And a lot of times it's the same audio. I'll take a book that I'll be dissecting, or let's say a mentor that I'm focusing on at the time, and I'll listen to the same audio literally 10, 15, 20 times. And it could be like a book that's like 6 hours, but I'll listen to it so many times until I can basically absorb the information. And not just kind of like, I read it, okay, on to the next thing. I do a lot of repetition on certain audios or things that I like to focus on that I listen to on a regular basis constantly. Yes.
What does that do to you?
It helps me get a better perspective. And I think that the part of the thing is realizing that you're never fully there. And I went through a struggle where I went from being at the top to going through a series of lawsuits. When I left my previous company, the challenge that I had is my partners, the shareholders, they had a hard time swallowing that this young kid came in and we gave him shares of the company when it wasn't worth anything, and now it's doing hundreds of millions of dollars. How do we justify paying him the money? And I realized that, you know what, I'm not happy. You know, they wanted to put me in a box, and I wanted to keep growing and going to more countries, and I ended up leaving them and started my own company. But in the process of leaving and starting a new company, the whole idea was, well, we're gonna bury him in lawsuits. So I had like 7 lawsuits in 7 different countries at the same time, and went through a period of time trying to deal with like all that stress, and went from, let's say, being at the top to going back down to the bottom, starting basically from scratch all over again and starting to rebuild. And in that process, I realized that, you know, I thought I was like super smart, knew everything. And then you start realizing, you know, there's a lot that I have to learn. There's a lot. And I think that part of those people that do personal study, the study, not just reading, because there are people that read all the books. They read all the books. They don't really apply what they read. But people that actually study and try to apply and learn and look at how can I take the value. Because there's stuff that I read that is great, but there's other stuff that I wear is kind of hokey pokey that I don't really connect with.
Right.
But I'm like Jim Rohn always said, you know, look for value, you know. So I can find value in any author or any audio podcast that I can, whether good or bad, and I can apply it to my life. And I'm always looking for kind of those nuggets that I can apply to it. And I think that kind of helped puts me in a perspective that, you know what, I still have a lot to learn. You know, even though I've run so many miles and done so much that for some would consider come extremely successful, I realized, you know, I'm just a small fish in a small pond. I can still do a lot more than what I'm doing right now. And I think that by taking the time every day to study or to read or to look for value in other things, it helps me kind of get a better perspective that I've still got a long ways to go.
So you know that you have that growth mindset that keeps pushing against that comfort zone, so you keep growing and expanding. And I love that you like you said, you take something, you listen to it over and over, because sometimes you know, we try to absorb and consume so much stuff that we don't really like. Basically, we in a way half-assing, you know, information rather than, how do I master this, right? How do I take this information and actually own it so that it becomes part of who I am and I can assimilate it and be able to share it with other people in so many different ways? I'm curious, you know, in your business, you know, helping a lot of people that you do, you would consider yourself that you're in the health industry, right?
Yeah, I'm in the health industry and the entrepreneur, teaching people how to generate an income.
Right. And so love to know, you have any success or any kind of family that you, because of your product, because of your help, because of that, literally their life kind of switched.
So there's a lot of people. I have a lot of stories from my past of that, and it's been interesting because, like I said before, like when I look for people to teach and to mentor and to train, you know, I don't care if you have money, you don't have money. The only thing I care about is if you're hungry to, you know, to learn. I've had people that in Peru that speak Quechua, which is kind of like an indigenous language, and the what they call the Sierra, the kind of the highlands in Peru, that speaking Spanish with a thicker accent than I do, you know, like in a different culture, and you think about like Peruvian with like their wardrobe and everything, like you think about, that's basically this type of an individual. They come from a background with little education, almost can't even read and write. And taking the products that I have and taking, let's say, the education that I give and teaching them how to launch a business and go from basically no income to building a huge opportunity, making over $10,000 a month. It's really interesting. One of the individuals that I helped, she had this dream that she wanted to drive a car. And so she was doing very well. She was making like $10,000 to $15,000 a month, which for Latin America, like in Peru, that's a lot of money. Especially look at the average income is like $300 a month. To be making that many more times what people make, you're making more a month than most people make an entire year, almost double in a year in 1 month. It was just a large amount for her. Wow. And she went to a car dealership and she wanted to buy a vehicle, but she's dressed like she normally dresses. She goes in and all the sales reps don't want to help her to, like, you know, we're not going to test drive a car with you. Like, you know, so she goes in and talks to she's like, where's the sales manager? She goes and sits down and the sales manager and says, hey, you know, I want to buy this 4x4, you know, and the manager's like, well, how are you going to pay for it? And she pulls out her backpack and says, well here, I have $30,000 here, right here. I want to buy it. You know, so the manager ends up giving her the drive and then selling her the car. Well, the funny part is she buys the car in cash, okay, that she'd been saving, paid for in cash, but she doesn't have a driver's license.
Okay.
So she buys it in cash and she takes the car home and she's just so excited, but she's spending so much time teaching other people how to do what she did. She didn't have time to take the class to learn how to drive. Right. So she's like, for like 2 months, I keep asking her, I said, hey, you know, are you driving yet? She said, no, I'm getting around to it. I've just been so busy going from city to city, teaching all her team and the people that she's been training how to do the business. Eventually she said she ended up hiring a chauffeur to drive her around just because she hadn't had the time to take her driver's test yet to be able to drive the vehicle.
Oh, nice. And it was funny. That's a good problem.
We took a bunch of the leaders from my team, the sales reps that were doing extremely well. We took them on a little retreat. And on that retreat, we did a bunch of like go-kart driving. And it was funny because she's like, well, Chris, can I drive the cart? I don't have a license, you know, because she had bought the car, but she hadn't a license yet. But she was driving the go-kart. And she was like asking me, like, is this legal? Can I drive the go-kart with it? Because I don't have a license.
That's so funny. Wow.
And I have lots of stories like that where you see people that it just really kind of changed not just their philosophy of life, but it has an impact on their family and on their kids. You know, it changes where they live. It changes what kind of schools they go to, what kind of education they have access to, what kind of foods that they can eat. Their diets change. They lose weight. And it's fun. It's fun to see those kind of dramatic changes. And I think a lot of it, especially when you're looking at people that are making, let's say, only $300 a month, it doesn't take that much information applied to make a drastic change in your life. They go from, let's say, $300 and making $1,000 a month. It takes a lot of work, but the learning curve isn't that much to have to learn to apply to be able to do that. And a lot of that's just story based, teaching people how to tell their stories.
Yeah.
And that for me is the fun part, you know, because in my business, I teach people, you know, basically to tell your story. And most companies, they try to tell their story as if they were Goliath. Like, we're the biggest, we're the best, we have the best product. And as you know, I know you've done a lot of work also with Bo Eason, you don't want to be Goliath, you want to be David in the story. And the fun part, like in my case, when I ended up in Peru in 2008, I was a David. I had like nothing going for me. Everybody else was a Goliath, you know, but people are attracted. They love that story, and it creates a connection. So you can build a following even though you don't have anything. You know, I didn't have capital. I didn't have any reason why you should want to do the business with me. Just I had this vision, and I was crazy enough that, you know, I'm going to do the impossible, and we're going to build this, and we're going to grow to all Latin America. And I was nobody. I didn't have anything. I was just David against the big boys, you know?
Right.
And if you can do those things, you know, if you can create the mindset, if you can create the action, and you can create connection through story, there's no limits to what you can do.
Beautiful. I have a question for you, a final question. And I know sometimes this is a difficult question to answer, but it's also something like, I believe that we all, in some shape, some way, right, we do half-ass things. And even though, because we are striving to be a badass, right, in whatever we do, but there are areas in our lives that we still consider ourselves a half-ass. What is the area right now that you're half-assing things, but you're on your path to becoming a badass in it?
Okay, and then for me, like, this is working out. I when we were together in January, Bo told me that I need to lose 20 pounds. I don't know if you remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
it's not very conventional that you're in a seminar, you're in front of we're in front of like 15 people, and he tells me that I need to lose 20 pounds. The funny thing was, I knew that I needed to lose the weight, you know, but I struggled. I was having a hard time. Like, I go back from the mastermind we're in, and I'm trying to lose the weight, and I can't do it. Like, I was completely half-assing. I mean, I know what I need to do. I know how to do it. You know, I ran track and field in college, so I know exactly what needs to be done. But I just, like I was like, what's wrong with me? And it, like, what is wrong with me? And I think that part of it was like right now, about 2.5 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I kind of like the window came down that like I only got like 90 days, like a little less than 90 days. If I don't do this now, like, this is like do or die. This is like a real deadline. It's not like, you know, I need to lose weight. It was like, I'm gonna have to show up again, and Bo's gonna ask me, Chris, did you lose the 20 pounds? He's not gonna have to ask me. He's gonna know right away. You know what I mean? So how am I gonna show up? I want to show up like a half ass, or I want to show up like a badass? And that's what I'm going through right now. You know, I was at 240 pounds. Right now I'm at 227. So I've got like 5 more weeks to go, but it's been hard. I mean, I'm going to the gym in the morning between CrossFit and cardio, and then I went and saw a nutritionist. I'm going in all in, serious badass on this. But the interesting thing is, I feel better. I feel like I have more energy. I feel like I have better creative ideas that I didn't have before. And this is going to be a habit that's going to stick. And then once I stick this one, I'll go on to other ones. I know you had the other day, you had Jeff Woods on and talked about kind of the one thing. And I've been trying to figure out what's the one thing in my life that if I can change from going from half-ass to badass, I can get like results. And for me, that was like the physical, you know, the physical fitness side. And if I can kind of take care of this, it's one of those things where I think most people know. People know what you need to do. It's just going from knowing and getting it done. And for me, it was having like a hard deadline that I couldn't let down my peers, and I didn't want to have like Bo like, crap, Chris, you're not a champion, you're not willing to go to the next level, you know. I think that for me, that was kind of one of the things, probably out of everything that I'll get out of the whole mastermind thing that I've done, I think probably one of the biggest thing has been just that part, like going from knowing you do something, but converting to actual action and getting it done.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that. I think it's, I just came back from a big conference with over 1,000 people there. And it's interesting to see, like, you know, we go to these different kind of educational platforms, right? Whether it's a mastermind or a bigger seminar education, and we come back and we're fired up, right? We have all these ideas that we want to do. And then the question becomes like, how do I implement it? Or how do I create the kind of thinking for myself where I'm not just going to take the ideas, but which one thing am I going to actually implement and bring to my life? And to realize how it shifts your life. Like, and sometimes, you know, we make it so big. I think that a lot of people that, you know, entrepreneurs that I meet, that they go to an event and they're so bombarded with information and they get so much overload and they get overwhelmed and they come home and like they know they got to do something, but like what is that key action, that key thing that's going to make it all shift, right? And it's something as simple like, you know, how can I just go to bed in a certain time, right? I think a lot of entrepreneurs, they're so like stay up, you know, late, but having the habit or being able to go to bed and get the rest.
Yeah, right? It's hard to get 7-8 hours of sleep a night. I'm trying to do that, work on that too, and I have a hard time. I get like 5, maybe 6, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to shave off another 2 hours, but it's important, you know. It's just hard, and I think that a lot of us struggle with, you know, like you know what you need to do, and I think that's kind of where the half-ass comes from, where, you know, it's not like you're like ignorant. You know,
right?
You know, you've been to the seminars. You've listened to the podcast. You know, you just got to do it. And in my situation, what I found is that when you put yourself in situations where there's like do or die, there's no turning back. You know, kind of when I went to Peru, it was like there was no plan B. You know, with the weight loss thing, I'm telling you right now is, you know, I have a hard deadline. In June, I have another seminar I have to go to, and I'm going to show up, and everybody knows, not just like just me. It's I've got people that know. Hey, well, you were supposed to lose 20 pounds since January. How are you going on it? And I think that the first couple of months, it was important, but it wasn't urgent. And when I got to the situation where like I don't have any time, like if I wait too long, it won't even be like physically possible to lose 20 pounds in like a week. So
right.
I need to start.
Arm or leg.
Yeah, I need to start now. You know, and it's not like I'm not just like going to try it. I need to get a dietitian. I need to get a workout plan. I need to start tracking, you know, and I've never like tracked calories, like, you know, I track everything, and it's a huge difference, you know. But I think that's where you're going from the shift from being a half-ass to badass.
Yeah, you're measuring, you're seeing where you're falling short, but also what you can improve and all that kind of stuff. That's great. So I look forward to seeing you when you come over here and seeing you in the shape of your life.
Well, thanks so much for having me on. It's always been fun to be on the podcast and spend some time with you.
So quick question. So if someone wants to get in touch with you and know more about what you do, how can they do that?
Best way is to find me on Facebook or Instagram. You can get at christidwell.me. You can find me. A lot of stuff I do is in Spanish, but you can connect through me on Facebook and Instagram off of that handle, christidwell.me, and we can get in touch.
Beautiful. Thanks for being here with us and sharing your knowledge, your wisdom, your experience, your story. And can't wait to see you. Boom! How did you like that? Hope you enjoyed the training and you found it valuable and you feel like this can help someone else, please share this information. That's how we keep making an impact. It's because of people like you that we can continue doing this. If you want to grow and scale your business, you're probably studying a lot, and that's great. You're probably studying all the different strategies out there, right? That's also great. But the hardest part is figuring out how to remove overwhelm and friction and get done what matters without burning yourself out and without killing yourself in the process. Is that making sense? That's what I struggled with for a while until I learned the secrets of precision-based growth. So if you're wondering how precision-based growth can work in your business or life, I created a special opportunity for you to get on a call with me to get on a track with the right focus and, more important, how to maximize growth, maximize efficiency, and simplify. You're not alone. Want to talk? Spots are extremely limited, so if you're serious and you want me to personally answer your direct questions, you can apply for your spot by going to talktosatori.com. Again, that's talktosatori.com.